Since March 2009, the Pharmacy Podcast has been developing content monthly, weekly, and daily for the business of pharmacy. With more than 25 different podcast channels, more than 1 million downloads, and 30-plus participating pharmacists, the Pharmacy Podcast Network is the global leader in podcasting for the pharmacy professional. Find all of our podcast channels by going to pharmacypodcast.com/shows.
This is the ACMA podcast. Career opportunities for pharmacists in the pharmaceutical industry have never been better. Are you interested in breaking into the industry? It can be competitive. You must distinguish yourself. The Accreditation Council for Medical Affairs, or the ACMA, offers the only specialized board certification for healthcare professionals to help prepare them for roles such as medical science liaison, medical director, drug information experts, and more. The Board Certified Medical Affairs Specialists, or BCMAS program, is an online, self-paced program recognized worldwide as the industry standard and has been featured on the Pharmacy Podcast Network, Forbes, ABC News, the Pharmaceutical Executive, and Yahoo Finance. Become a Board Certified Medical Affairs Specialist and build your professional brand. Learn more. Go to medicalaffairsspecialist.org.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Millennial Pharma Leader Podcast. I'm Jeff Pike, your host, and here with me today is Ben Penley and Smit Patel, my fellow founders and members of the exec team of MPL. We founded the online career development magazine together, have a whole bunch of great contributing authors, and for the first time, we are all here together now to chat a little bit. We actually just met in person with Smit a couple of weeks ago at AMCP Nexus, which is an annual conference, which I think we all really enjoyed and got a lot out of. So we'll give a little bit of a recap on AMCP Nexus, what we did there, what we took away from the conference. We'll talk about future directions for MPL, and we'll also take some audience questions. We got a lot of great questions from folks on LinkedIn and Instagram. So thank you all for contributing, and hopefully we'll get the chance to talk through them all today. And finally, we'll talk a little bit about our personal future goals and parting words of advice for other aspiring MPLs. So just to get us started, let's kick off with some introductions. So as you guys know, I'm Jeff. I am a third year pharmacy student. And I am the president and co-founder of Millennial Pharma Leader. I really pursued pharmacy school because I was always really interested in science and the human body, but also fascinated by how the body communicates when things go wrong. And I loved pharmacy specifically out of all the healthcare professions because you really have to learn how to communicate the science behind these innovative medicines from everyone, from a doctor down to a patient, and you really have to learn how to meet people at their level of health literacy and communicate science effectively. So that's what drew me to pharmacy school. I've always been really passionate about the pharmaceutical industry, particularly because it's there's so many different disciplines and folks with different educational backgrounds working together. I love the innovation behind it, the sort of noble goal of creating new medicines and solving the biggest medical challenges that still face us today. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ben to introduce himself.
Hi, everyone. Good to be on the podcast. I'm Ben Penley. I am the editor-in-chief and co-founder of MPL. I got my BS in chemistry at UNC Chapel Hill, and then I went into pharmacy school. Was looking either at doing a PhD in chemistry or pharmacy school, and I didn't really want to do benchtop research, so that's sort of what brought me to pharmacy. I didn't really know what I wanted to do with that degree. Didn't really even know about the opportunities that existed beyond community and hospital pharmacy, so I was really fortunate to get connected with things like AMCP early on in my career. PharmD career, and have explored that route ever since then. So,
Hey everyone, so good to be on the podcast. I'm Smith Patel. I'm a third-year pharmacy student at The Ohio State University, and my journey of pharmacy started when I moved to America after my undergrad, where I was working for a small pharma in a management analyst team, and where I got to learn about pharmacy distribution channel, and that got me excited to get more credentials and get more clinical knowledge and virtuosity. So I started PharmD program. And I saw these difference in the real world market and the pharmacy school that made me go and try different things like hackathons. And then the summer of my P1, I spent in Boston at MIT and Harvard Medical School for a health innovation bootcamp that changed the trajectory of my life to going into more digital medicine and innovation space. And a lot of pharma right now is working in that space, which excites me, and bringing those innovative models, drugs to life to make sure more patients get access to it. And right now working with a startup for drug price transparency using technology again.
Wonderful. So we'll start by digging into AMCP Nexus and talking a little bit about, you know, why students should go to conferences, what you can get out of them, and some tips and tricks to really maximize your experience. So why AMCP? Why Nexus? You know, we happen to be really involved, at least Ben and I and Smith as well, in AMCP, since we all have strong student chapters. But what we want to emphasize is that there are lots of other industry-oriented organizations like ISPOR and IPHO and even DIA. I think my recommendation for students would be to find the organizations that have the strongest local presence so that you can meet other classmates who share interests in the pharmaceutical industry, and then attend these conferences where you can meet colleagues from across the country who share those interests and kind of learn from the frontier of the space. So AMCP as an organization is very payer focused, but they also deal a lot with innovations in the pharmaceutical industry. And I think its membership breakdown is pretty much 50-50 in terms of professionals who come from the payer space compared to the pharmaceutical industry. So a lot of cool folks to meet there. Ben, what was your favorite educational session at Nexus?
Yeah, so my favorite educational sessions were really focused on policy. I was kind of surprised that I found those the most interesting, but one session in particular, I can't remember the name of it, but it was with Melissa Andel, and she talked about healthcare reform and you know, coming into the 2020 Democratic election, what the candidates currently have in terms of their healthcare policies and what they want to do to improve access and change healthcare. And I think one really interesting stat that was presented during the session was sort of centers around the Medicare for All debate, in that 67% of people they rank their employer-sponsored health insurance an A or a B, but wow, then 50% or around that approve of Medicare for All. So those don't really jive. If you sort of endorse Medicare for All, then you're going to be losing your employer-sponsored insurance. So that's going to be really interesting to see how that develops coming into 2020.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, health policy is a crazy space, and it's interesting how little so many people even know about it, especially if they don't work in healthcare.
Yeah, absolutely. And they sort of the headliner session was with one of the architects of the American Patients First blueprint for lowering prescription drug prices. And that was really an incredible session, just really a lot going on currently in the administration to reduce drug prices, a lot of proposals being talked about.
Nice.
It's good to know. Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Smith? What was your favorite topic at the conference?
Oh, my favorite topic was, I think, on Friday, the last day when most of the people were out. And I think there was this session on future trends in health technology and digital therapeutics, which really sparked my interest in terms of we live in this world of digitalization. And I think the session was focused more on, we know that all the digital technology and medicine is coming forward. How are we going to integrate those technology in upcoming few years? And some of the sessions had included about artificial intelligence and interactive robotics for enhancement of patient care to mHealth, that is the mobile health technology, for increasing the engagement and outcome and optimizing outcomes of the patient. So I think it was really interesting to see different perspectives of the panels. I remember Ben Parcher from Xenda and Corey Kitt from Catalia Health were discussing that we had focused more on like behavioral changes and how we can integrate those technology in our day-to-day lives. And that was really fascinating.
Yeah, that is cool. It's interesting to see how, you know, our entire world is changing from companies like Facebook and Amazon, and how things are becoming more convenient. People are looking for that same level of convenience in healthcare, and how can we keep up with these more consumer focused, consumer centric demands? That's cool stuff. Yeah, my favorite panel was a biosimilars panel. They had a team of experts talking a little bit about biosimilars, and I was kind of surprised to hear how much pushback there was from different groups, even doctor and patient advocacy groups, sort of against biosimilars. And my takeaway was that really biosimilars overall kind of have a branding issue, where patients and doctors, when surveyed, they're not entirely sure what a biosimilar implies, right? Because, you know, just to kind of take a step back, biosimilars are essentially the same molecule as a biologic drug. They are just, you know, developed slightly differently, but they're shown to have the same level of efficacy. And I always thought of them more as a biogeneric, but I think this term biosimilar kind of sheds doubt from a doctor or a patient's eyes that, you know, are you really getting the same thing as your original branded biologic there? And that's kind of why we haven't seen uptake in the U.S. biosimilars market the same way we have in Europe and other places. So I thought that was cool.
I think there can be definitely some, my understanding is that in biosimilars, there's some small, you know, structural differences, since these are massive proteins that are manufactured in multi-step processes. But yeah, the efficacy there, you know, has been shown, and the FDA wouldn't have approved it if it hadn't been shown to be similar to the reference product. So right. Yeah, there is a I wish I'd gone to that session.
Yeah, it was interesting. And what they don't tell you is that reference products, you know, they're biologics as well, so they also have variations in their molecules slightly, but they don't get that same biosimilar label. So it's an interesting difference there, and a little bit of a branding problem for biosimilars. Yeah, so just kind of from that, from hearing about our favorite sessions, you can tell there were a good mix of different educational topics at the conference. And really, you know, it's not just about payers, but the industry as a whole. Did you guys engage in any social activities over the course of the week while you were at Nexus?
Yeah, so there was a UNC alum networking event just outside of the conference center, and that was really great, meeting a lot of people who have really made a big impact on UNC. There are a lot of people who really started the AMCP chapter at our school, and also in that same space, just kind of coincidentally, Xenda, which is where I had my summer internship a few weeks ago in medical communications, or it was a few months ago, they were in the same spot. So I got to meet up with a bunch of people from Xenda again, and that was really great to talk with them.
Yeah. And what I always enjoy the exchange periods during the conference, where they just have lots of different companies who have set up their their stations and advertise their products and what their company does. And it's always a chance to walk around and present yourself. I think this is particularly beneficial as a student because you have an excuse to walk up and say, "Hey, I don't know anything about you. Please tell me what you do. What is your company? What is the therapeutic area? How do your drugs work?" And since you're a student, you know, they're totally cool with explaining that to you. I think most professionals are really friendly about educating the next generation. So you can kind of play that student card to meet all sorts of people. They're usually account managers or medical science liaisons or various kinds of sales reps at these conferences.
Yeah.
Who'd you meet?
I think, as you mentioned, it was a good opportunity for students, including me, to know more about the companies, their current drugs, because they usually try to brand and advertise in their booths, what they're working on recently. So it's a great opportunity. And also, I think the residency and the fellowship showcase was a good opportunity to meet the current fellows who are in the field, who just graduated from pharmacy school and got into some kind of residency or fellowship with the pharmaceutical industry. So it was a good way to connect with them. And I think apart from that, the Conference Buddy program of AMCP Nexus was very interesting. I met one of my mentor, Conference Buddy from IngenuRx, and got to learn a lot about her role. And she introduced me to her entire team. So it was a good breadth of perspective from a totally new, different industry.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's cool. Right. So, and that was actually your first AMCP Nexus ever, right, Smith?
Yeah, it was my first AMCP Nexus. That's great.
Mine too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I've been to a couple at this point. but yeah, it's always good. It's fun because once you start going to conferences over and over, you see the same other students who are pretty engaged with the organization, and you start forming these friends with colleagues who have the same interests as you, who are all over the country. So that's always fun too. So now that we've...
And we got to meet up with all the millennial pharma leaders, the contributors.
That's right. Yeah, we met Brianna Santaniello, the medical science liaison on our team, who's shared articles and come on the podcast before. That was wonderful. Brian Ung was there as well, and so was Dennis Liu, who all contributed.
Soham Shukla was there too.
Mm-hmm. It's like a big party.
Yeah. So many MPLs.
It was good to see everyone. It's always sort of a homecoming experience. Great. So now that we've covered the conference, we wanted to spend some time diving into future directions for MPL. Ben, did you actually kind of want to kick us off in this topic?
Yeah, sure. So something that I have been working on recently is a series of interviews, and I didn't really know it was going to be a series when I started, but I had an interview with Izzy Kang about medical communications, and she's a fellow currently at Xcenda, and she was my manager over the summer, and I think that went really well, and I think that she did a great job of explaining what that service line is and how to, you know, get involved with medical communications or medical affairs and the Xcenda. And so I want to have a series of interviews that I transcribe and are text-based with current fellows in different functional areas, and really just with the purpose of keeping everyone informed of the opportunities that exist out there. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, you get some of that either through self-research, or if you are lucky and fortunate enough to have an extracurricular club like AMCP or IPHO bring some fellows or some young professionals to your school to talk about their functional area, then you get it through that. But I think having this, and this sort of gets to the point of MPL, having this centralized location or reference point to see what exists out there, it is incredibly useful. So hopefully we'll have another one of those. I interviewed Dennis Liu. He's in medical managed care at Sanofi, and hopefully debuting that one sometime next week.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And you're absolutely right, Ben. It's really what NPL is all about. And we want to touch as many functional areas as possible and keep connected with sort of that generation that's just on the cusp of starting their careers and learning more about them. So love that you've been keeping that up, interviewing folks. We've gotten great feedback so far on the site in terms of our written and recorded content. It's been wonderful to have all of these students and professionals sharing what they've learned so far about either pursuing roles or actually working in roles in the pharmaceutical and biotech and life science industries. So in terms of future directions, of course, the website's tied to millennials. So our goal over time is to, you know, I say transition, but we really want to keep our student-centric career development, but also build on that and incorporate more and more working professional perspectives in career development, since we're all going to be transitioning into full-time roles ourselves, and it would be great to peel the veil back even more on sort of what life is like on the job and provide resources to our peers about, you know, what sort of best practices we're discovering and what sort of technologies we're finding helpful to succeed in our roles. So some ideas that we've been thinking about are including a forum for the website so that, you know, engaged members of the page can share thoughts with each other and get feedback from peers and create more of a community on that front. We've talked about having conference meetups. Since Ben is diving more into this series of text interviews with fellows and professionals in different areas, we want to start shifting our podcast gifts from new professionals to more thought leaders, such as startup founders, CEOs, sort of movers and shakers in the industry, to hopefully even broaden the interest in the podcast to more working professionals as well. People have asked us about sort of monetization and kind of what is the business model of NPL. And my perspective, and I think Ben agrees with me, is that if it occurs natively, that's great. But our goal was never to make money off of students. We've really liked that we can just use NPL as a platform for a personal branding, which has been really, really great for, but also just an outlet for writing and reflecting and exchanging best practices with our peers and giving our peers a chance to share their reflections as well. Ben and Smith, do you have anything else for future directions you want to touch on?
Yeah, I've sort of said this before about NPL, but I guess this isn't a future direction, but more of just a, you know, why I like NPL so much and why I'm glad that it exists is I think that one of the greatest things I've seen is, you know, the readership is great, but I think the contributors are really engaging with the topics that they're writing about. And I think there's like no greater way to learn about something than to sit down, do tons of research, and then come out with like a 1,000-word article on something going on in the industry right now. And it really empowers, I think, our students and our contributors to engage with what's going on out there. Not really a future direction, but.
No, yeah, that's a good point, Ben. Great. So without further ado, we'll hop into some audience questions. We have quite a bunch to get through. So if we don't cover them all, we apologize. Hopefully we'll get a chance to have another founders panel in the future and revisit any that we missed. But I'll go ahead and kick it off. Go ahead.
It's Biju Shah, and his question was, what are our thoughts on where the real gaps in the college education exist, and how can we bridge some of those deficits?
Yeah, so specifically for the PharmD program, since that's kind of what our perspective is coming from right now, my thought is that curriculums need to emphasize you know, how broadly the PharmD training can actually be applied. Because throughout school, they really hammer in on, you know, the clinical and the community applications of the PharmD degree. But what they really miss out on is how translatable it really is. So, you know, for those who aren't PharmDs, you learn a ton over the course of 4 years about drug information. You learn about how just about every common drug works, its side effects, the different disease states and sort of the treatment algorithms there. And you learn how to communicate that information from patients to patients and doctors. And really having that level of clinical expertise, you have the ability to be a clinically oriented problem solver, but really in an adaptive way. There are so many teams in industry and managed care and consulting that would benefit from that clinical background. But I feel like for the PharmD specifically, they narrow in on just one specific application of that skill set, when really there's a whole world out there that you could apply that training to.
Yeah, I think I completely agree on how much clinically trained we are, and our skills are so transferable to so many non-traditional roles that are emerging right now with changing landscapes in the field of pharmacy especially. I think the major gap is, or what I believe is, there's something else happening in the real world life with this fast change of the pace of the field of healthcare, especially pharmacy. And something else is being taught in the school when it comes to like preparing students. Mm-hmm. I understand the focus is a lot on clinically driven content. And as you mentioned, we learn about side effects, therapeutics, black box warnings, all those things on the top of our head. But we are moving in a direction which is much more different when it comes to application of those to the outside world. The problems are still the same, the drug pricing problems, the value contracting in the managed care space, to the innovation side in the pharma industries. I think just understanding clinically relevant content would not make us strong and competitive for those skills. I think developing and focusing more on soft skills, and mm-hmm. also identifying the future market and designing curriculums 5 years or 10 years ahead would be strategic to bridge the gap between those.
Definitely. I'll tee up this next question. Anna Dizik asks, she says, I would love to hear your thoughts on how we can help strike the balance between equitable drug pricing and continued innovation in pharma. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, so this is a good question. I think it's a very complicated one that I don't think we could answer in a 2-hour podcast.
2 hour?
Yeah, man, is that too long?
Do you want to do it?
Oh, no, yeah. So I think that there are a lot of things that can be. There's no one answer for this question. I think that what it sort of boils down to is that this innovation really is coming in the R&D phase, and that pharma companies are investing a lot in R&D, and that because there's such a high failure rate for these early drug candidates, that they have to invest a lot and then, you know, potentially increase their prices because of this, you know, cash flow back into R&D. So I think that's sort of what that question, you know, boiling that question down. But what we see a lot of companies doing, and I think that this is one of the ways that they're addressing it, and I think more and more it's going to happen, is that big pharma is looking at smaller biotechs that already have drug candidates that have really good preclinical data and have good chances of, you know, eventually getting to patients. And they're acquiring these small biotechs, or they're partnering with them and allowing the venture capital entrepreneur side of the industry to you know, go through and screen those drug candidates. And I think that then Big Pharma comes in and scales up production because they have the capacity to, and also just ensures that the original innovator's product is of high quality, and then they can, you know, ensure that it gets on payers' formularies, et cetera, et cetera. Patients have access to it. So I guess outsourcing, you know, supplementing with outsourcing is one of the ways that I think that the industry is looking to
address that question. Those are good points, Ben. to kind of back you up, I think if we could answer this question for Anna, we'd probably be founding a startup company of our own of some kind to solve the drug pricing debacle in the United States. It's tough, right? Especially when you have so many different payers, mm-hmm. public and private. There's a lot of different sort of customer groups to cater to and negotiate with, who are, and maybe that'll be the answer, is that we'll get closer and closer to the right price for medicines, since there's only a handful of payers who have a lot of negotiating power for access to those patients. Yeah. Smit, do you have anything else to add to that?
Yeah, I think this was a very, very interesting question and something very hot in the market today, that we have all these innovation happening in pharma. How are we going to price those innovation and make it affordable to our patients? I think I see a perspective from a different viewpoint, and I completely agree with both of you. We would be rather starting a startup if we can answer this question. From my perspective, America is actually a hub of pharmaceutical innovation and supports the innovation for entire world. If you see, major R&Ds are happening in United States, and I think America is getting the VIP access to all those new medications and therapeutics that's coming to the market. Just think of it like a Disney VIP pass, like for first 20 years of patent, where people in America gets the access to that. So I think, for example, take an example of a multiple sclerosis patient. Only because of the current innovation, we are able to delay the disease progression and improve the quality of life. I think those innovation is not compared to the price, but is compared to the quality and the outcome. So we are asking the right question to a wrong system, and we are not comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges. I think rather we should be asking, how can we reduce those filters of middleman in our pharmacy distribution system so that we can bring down the price if they are not bringing equal return on investment.
You know, Smith, that's a good point. And maybe more vertical integration, which will reduce some of these middlemen, will help kind of streamline the value throughout mm-hmm. the chain to deliver more of it to the patients. Yeah, I'm curious about that. That's interesting. I think ultimately it's a question that we will continue to ask ourselves and challenge each other with throughout our careers, because I think the answer is very multivariate and nuanced.
Agreed.
Yep. Well, that's about all the time we have today for this podcast. I think we're going to have a part two to follow it up with and get through the rest of these questions. Do you guys have any parting thoughts for would-be MPLs?
Yeah, so I can go ahead and offer, I guess, some advice. I don't know if I would take advice from me, but I think that really, and this is sort of going back to what I said about the contributors for MPL, is staying engaged with the topics, staying engaged with what's going on in the industry right now will only set you up to be able to, I mean, you're going to have to talk about this stuff if you want an opportunity within industry. So making sure that you're well-informed will really pay dividends, I think.
That's great. What about you, Smith?
I don't think I'm old enough to give advice, but I would say, I think just see the energy and do things that excites you and reach out. Like, say, for example, if someone's interested in writing a content, platforms like MPLs are designed to facilitate and help them grow and share with a larger audience. And I would just say that it just takes a spoonful of creativity and a courage and a handful of belief to follow your passion. So just get wildly obsessed with it.
That's great advice. Yeah, just to follow up with you guys, I think, you know, you don't have to know where is necessarily the end goal of your personal career development. Just try to have a sense generally of what kind of things you enjoy. Do you like working with people? Do you like working in an office? Would you rather be remote? What sort of therapeutic areas or industries really engage you? And no matter what experiences you have along your journey, just incorporate it into your story and make sure that you know how to tell your story and what you got out of each experience. Because ultimately, when you're sharing your life's experiences and your skill set today with people, all they will have about your expertise to go on is that story you tell them. So make sure that you spend plenty of time reflecting and, kind of like Ben said, staying informed and making sure you kind of keep track of your key takeaways from each experience.
Well, yeah, thanks. I feel like we also would be remiss to not include networking, right?
So, be sure to network.
Yeah, network. Gotta include that in every advice.
Might have to have a whole podcast just on that topic. Well, that's awesome. Well, thanks guys for joining and thanks everyone for tuning in, and maybe we'll catch you for a part two here soon.
We thank you for listening to the ACMA podcast, part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network. To learn more about medical affairs and new career opportunities, please go to acmapodcast.com.